Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 74. Say Santa Quattro of Lexis L podcast. Been a big week. A big week for us. Sandwich bar went out. We record this on a Thursday. Sandwich bar went out at 6:30 last night on Radio 4. It'd already been transmitted at 11 on Saturday night, but this is the big one, which goes out into 1.2 million homes. And it's been, been amazing. What there is on Twitter, what Linda's been able to find on Twitter, is amazingly complimentary. And also there's some very good previews, all in sort of right-wing paper, well, the Radio Times that you mentioned, but also the Times and the Daily Mail. I'm very perceptive. I mean, it's short previews, but both really intelligent and perceptive about what the show is. Hmm. You can download it from BBC Sounds and binge on all four. I mean, I do yearn for that. Linda thinks that maybe a lot of people, particularly my people, are, you know, not, you know, boycotting Twitter, really, and it's not necessarily been anything to replace it. Hmm. Also, there was that period where I thought when Sandwich Bar trended at number one on Twitter for like 3 days or something, which was unheard of for a Radio 4 show. And I don't know how you bottle that, really. I don't know why that was, or I certainly don't seem to be able to get back to that level. But anyway, yeah, so it's I don't know whether at some point, lobbyists for interests other than ours will get together and have a go at it. I suspect they won't, really. But
Well, you're competing with the Glastonbury lineup poster.
Is that trending?
Which I'm just looking now at what's trending. World Book Day. PSG LIV, I guess that's football.
Paris Saint-Germain versus Liverpool.
Beautiful Thursday is trending.
Oh, fuck's sake.
Glastonbury, they released the lineup. Ash Wednesday, Lent. More football, lots of football stuff.
Yeah.
Roy Ayres. Oh, no. He hasn't popped his clogs, has he?
Yes, he has.
No!
Oh, dear.
Saw him at Glastonbury a few years back, funnily enough. And Canada. You can't compete with Canada.
No, but still, get on Twitter. Make me happy.
That's fucked. Everyone's going over, all the people who are on side are going over to Blue Sky, which is okay. The new Twitter. It's the new Twitter, apparently.
Can you look at that and see if I'm trending on that?
Okay. Yeah, I can. Sure, I can.
This is wanting affirmation, Alexi, this morning. I spent fucking years working on this radio series. These people can do it. Have it trending on some platform I've never heard of.
What people? Oh, how does this fucking work? Well, let me just put in Sandwich Bar and see what... if anyone's been saying... it's a lot of posts about actual Sandwich Bar. Oh, absolutely delighted. There's a new series of Sandwich Bar on BBC Sounds. Alexi's a national treasure, always makes me smile. We need all the laughs we can get these days. Look, I listened to 3 episodes of Sandwich Bar and I was delighted by it. It's really nice to hear something that's written by an actual writer. You know, you're such a good fucking writer, Alexi.
Yeah.
And it's just beautifully angry. And I loved trying to figure out constantly what's real and what's not, you know, how much of these stories you tell. Because they start off so grounded and then you just...
Yeah. And they're often true for a long time until they stop being true.
I guess you got to like finish it with a joke, I suppose. Yeah. So you've got, then you go off piste.
I think it's obviously it's landing and Yeah, people love it, really. And, you know,
it's ferocious and really well written, beautifully performed. Yeah. The song was so gorgeous in episode three. And but I am confused why it appears that it's been on BBC Sounds since the 1st of March.
I thought it'd been on, was that Saturday?
Yeah, they dropped the new series on the Saturday. So far ahead of the live premiere.
I mean, that's just, I can't really argue with them about that. That's what they...
Well, it just feels like they're diluting the listenership. Surely the live show should come out first and then they put it on Sounds.
You would think that would make more sense, but, you know. Well, it's theoretic. I mean, it went out at 11 on Saturday night and then they put it on Sounds simultaneously with that. But obviously that the big launch was last night.
It went out live
really.
On Saturday night as well?
Yeah, at 11. And it goes out if anybody's still out there listening in a linear fashion to the radio, it will be on again. So each episode is on, basically, appears first at 11 at night on Saturday. Radio 4 on Saturday and then is repeated at 6:30.
Confusing.
It is. Then you can you can download it from Sounds and just binge listen that way, really. So, no, I'm intensely proud of Sandwich Bar, really. I think it was harder to do this series than previous ones since, because of the nature of the world and just digging up more, finding more and more material, finding jokes. Which are very difficult things to write, really. It's not easy to write a good gag, I think. But I mean, that's what in a way sets me apart from other comics as well, is that I have, the anger and the monologues and the surrealism, but also there's a well-crafted joke in there.
Yes.
Every couple of minutes, it's a good gag. And that's what I think partly connects me with stand-up comedy from from its inceptions, whenever that was, the Victorian age, or I think that's what, I like that. I like that kind of lineage, that heredity that I go back in many ways to, great classic stand-ups, but also there is obviously a difference as well.
And there's huge elements of your book writing in there. It does feel like, reading, having your short stories read to me, the way the prose is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, partly stand-up. Yeah, and partly stand-up is always about memoirs, about things. And some bits of it are from.
Yes, but such a veneer of loose, unrehearsed, like when a good stand-up makes it look like they've not rehearsed
Yeah.
And there are elements of that, you do little asides to the audience or little chuckles and, you keep it grounded and real and feeling like it's not, I'm not being narrated at.
Yeah.
But it's written and constructed so well. And yes. I love the Mark Wahlberg bit about the secret agent. And that's a topic that we've talked about on the podcast.
Yeah,
I'm very proud to work with you.
And, thank you.
And I'm proud of you for that show.
And actually, sort of in a way, and with one show where I say I'm going to do another three series, I don't know that whether I will or not. I am, now that it's out, I am starting to have ideas, but it will be a mammoth task. I mean, to write 2 hours of stand-ups, like Rich, the producer said, I've already written, I think I said, there's 10 Edinburgh shows. And to write another two is a big challenge, but we'll see. I quite like that the format doesn't change either. The theme song is the same. The formula is essential. I think I would keep that, really.
Well, that's a helpful writing tool, isn't it, to have a template like that?
Yeah. I mean, I think, I think sometimes in Britain we can mess with things, for no good reason, really. That is every column I've ever written, every thought I've ever had is in that series.
Really?
I think feels like it, yeah. Anyway, so there we are. Anyway, so it's out last night. Went out. And we'll see you over the next 4 weeks. what unfolds. I missed that, you know, linear. That, you know, when it, you know, everybody listened at the same time.
Yeah.
Obviously you don't get any more. But, yes, I'm very happy with how it's turned out in the end. I mean, we did, you know, so we went back and re-recorded some stuff and did a whole extra evening's recording because I felt like I needed to do that.
It's hard to spot what bits they
were.
Yeah,
you'd never be able to tell.
It must, yeah, and a lot of energy you expunge up on that stage.
Yes,
isn't
as opposed
it?
To that now. Yeah.
Sleepy Alexi, we get on the podcast. Yeah. Bedtime Alexi. Yeah. I love it, man. Big fan.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Where would you like to go now? No, we've got that settled.
Well, just to let. Well, while we're talking about your public shit, I want to say that your episode with Nigel of Celebrity Antiques Road Trip.
Yeah.
Has a broadcast date, Thursday, March the 13th.
Thursday, March the 13th, all right.
7 p.m. on BBC Two.
Right. There's a big publicity blitz about that.
A little bit, yeah. Alexi Sale and Nigel Planer travel across Northumberland in a 1969 MGC Roadster.
Yes.
Godfathers of alternative comedy, Alexi Sale and Nigel Planer. That's going to be fucking hilarious. yes. I can't wait. Hey, Talal here with a quick correction. It's actually airing Wednesday the 12th of March, 7 p.m, BBC Two. Please disregard the dates previously mentioned. Wednesday 12th of March, 7 p.m, BBC Two. All right, back to the show. I can't wait. And I think, yeah, you're going to have, give it a year, you're going to have a lot more to say on Sandwich Bar.
Certainly the world is... In a sense, the world is cooperating with providing new material.
What is it you said in times of darkness? Will there be singing? There will be singing, but about the darkness.
Yes, Bertolt Brecht, the motto.
Let's see how much darker it gets. I made labneh.
All right, okay.
Do you like labneh?
I do, yeah. What's the difference between that and yogurt?
It's strained. It's very strained yogurt.
Right.
So like Greek yogurt is like slightly strained. But then you add a bit of salt to the yogurt and then you whack it in a cheesecloth and hang it over a bowl overnight, which is what I did last night. And when we're done recording here, I'm going to go eat myself a bowl of labneh. This is the first time I've done it. I'm very excited.
Sounds exciting.
I'm going to garnish it with some dry mint and lots of olive oil. Dip pita bread in it.
That's lovely. I went, you know, my, and it's a, you know, one of my favorite sort of Middle Eastern stroke Levantine things I've forgotten what it's called, kanafi.
Knafe, the Arabic cheesecake.
Yeah, yeah, which you also get. There's a place in Green Lanes that only does, I mean, Turkish, but knafe. There's, you know, and it varies quite wildly, really, between Turkish and Levantine knafe. But I had knafe. There's this extraordinary place in Holborn near me. You know, there's a Palestinian restaurant called Hiba. Hiba. Very nice restaurant. And obviously, because they own it or they rent a building, they can fly massive Palestinian flags from the building.
Great.
But there's an attempt to create a cultural center and performance space in all the floors. There's about four or five floors above Hiba.
Oh.
And the guy that does Gaza Cola, Osama something or other. I think he's the moving figure. But what they've done is, it's really weird. They've taken all the floors out of this five-story building And so it's just open to the, and then they want to have the roof open as well. It's like all decorated like it's a kind of a Palestinian, like a Middle Eastern house with a kind of gallery all the way around on each floor.
Like a courtyard in the middle.
Like a kind of courtyard, yeah, like a, yeah. I don't know how they've got away, because they don't own it, they're renting it. But it's the most extraordinary space, so anyway, Palestine House on...
Better to ask forgiveness than to ask permission.
Yes, I think...
Just do the work, they will like it when it's done, trust me.
Exactly. Yeah. So anyway, that's... I don't know whether it's officially opened yet. It was a kind of fundraising
that's cool.
Event. Yeah. I mean, that guy, Osama, I can't remember his second name. It's quite a remarkable.
Isn't he a Zumlot?
Is he a Zumlot?
His surname isn't Zumlot. But he's Hussam Zumlot's brother, isn't he? I could be speaking out of turn here.
I don't think his surname is Zumlot, but then that.
You know, right.
I think it's like Noor or something. But he's quite
there's one in Ladbroke Grove that's definitely in the Zumlot family. There's a right. cafe, a Palestinian cafe there.
Right.
And I'm not sure if it's the same owners. I could be getting mixed up. Yeah.
But no, what he's, about he's very fierce. I think he was in Israeli prisons for a long time. He talked about just he's got a kind of adopted son in a way that a friend of his who's an activist said, you know, they're going to kill me. Look after my son. So, and they did the next day, the Israelis. And that, I think he said the son has been shot in the head by a drone, taken away from hospital by the Israelis. He doesn't know if he's alive or dead. I mean, and that is an everyday story of Palestinian folk, really.
It's funny. It's not just, yeah, it is.
But yeah.
It's unfortunately, a lot of the Arabs and people who come from these dictatorship countries is... It's funny you say, I was crying my eyes out last night. We were binge watching season one of Mo, the second half of the season.
Yeah.
Finishing it off. And it's just heavy stuff. Like, it's such a funny show and the gags are really good, but just really heavy topics are dealt with. And I love how it's dealt with in such a kind of normal conversational way, because it is just so normal. Every Arabic person knows someone who's been tortured or been murdered or been
disappeared. Yeah, I mean, not just in Palestine, but just anywhere. Like
in Syria or...
Egypt.
It's even just
Jordan, really,
a normal thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's happening to Mo as well. He's learning stuff about his dad. And I just love that it's, you know... These topics are being talked about conversationally, but in American accents and in Houston, Texas, because it is, we might be living here or born here in the UK, in America, but we still carry that shit with us.
Yeah.
It's so fucking usual that you know someone who's, you know, whether it's your dad, your cousin, your uncle. And then, you know, I was listening to a podcast. There's this podcaster I listen to who's a Palestinian American, but it really frustrates me that he never talks about Palestine. It really pisses me off.
Right.
But I guess he's got sponsorships to think about, or he doesn't want to alienate his audience or whatever. And I'm just like, you fucking...
Yeah.
There's a thing in the back of my brain, like, why don't you just mention it, you know? But then he casually mentioned, just in passing, you know, his dad got sniped by an Israeli. You know, his granddad was sniped by an Israeli. I was like, oh, finally he said something.
Yeah.
But also it made me really sad for him. Obviously there's a reason he doesn't want to bring it up on a comedy podcast.
Look, the collective trauma of that as well is, you know, we're going to last, you know, half,
especially 500 years. Palestinians now.
Yeah.
Especially for them now.
Yeah.
It's such a wide scale.
Yeah. Yeah, I do believe that, you know, that trauma does, it lasts a long time. It's, you know, it goes down the generations. The trauma of slavery, the trauma of, you know, European anti-Semitism, which has landed us in this current mess, it goes on and on and on, really.
It turns ugly after some generations, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, it can do.
It can do. You're from a Russian Jewish background, right?
I think so. Yeah, I should really research. I've forgotten. It's a bit like I forgot, like a con man. I've forgotten which lie I told really about where I'm from. Because I sometimes said and Molly was very unreliable, really. So possibly like Odessa or maybe Lithuania's.
That could be your next sandwich bar season. It's like who you think you are style.
They asked me to do the first series. Who do you do? They asked me to be in it, and I was like, fuck off, who's going to do that? And then, of course, when it got successful, I went back and said, oh, well, I wouldn't. And they said, no, you're fucking you. You don't get to turn us down anymore. Yeah, star in a reasonably priced car. I did that as well with Top Gear. Again, I was like, oh, fuck, I'm not doing that. And then, again, when I saw how popular it was, I tried to weasel my way back in, but they were having none of it. I've done that.
Stick to your... You have good instincts with that. You might turn down the odd thing you regret, but I'm sure there's a lot of stuff that you were right to turn down.
I guess.
But I wonder if your family history is like Fiddler on the Roof style.
I think it must be a bit. I mean, yeah. I mean, my grandparents came over from... They met in Molly's parents met in Northern Ireland. They're both Jewish. They're both fleeing persecution somewhere in, I guess, the Russian Empire. Met in Northern Ireland and then came over to Liverpool. They were Orthodox. They only spoke Yiddish in the house. And that's all I know. Called Mendel. If anybody wants to do that for me, they were called Mendelssohn.
Of course, Sale's your dad's name. Yeah.
Sale is a Manx name. Rawr. Viking.
Mendelssohn.
Mendelssohn. They landed up in Lurgan in Northern Ireland. I think it is in Northern Ireland.
Any family historians out there?
Yeah.
Feel free to get in touch.
Yeah.
I'd love to learn about that. Yeah. I love Fiddler on the Roof as well.
I think at some point I was offered a number two tour of Fiddler on the Roof, you know, just doing doing theatres, do a big tour in Nottingham.
Surely playing...
Dundee, playing Tefal or whatever he's called.
He's played by Zero Mostel.
Zero Mostel in the
film. And Omar Jalili in the West End production, which I went to see. He was great. There was so much backlash. There was so much backlash.
Because he's Iranian. Yeah,
I think Middle Easterners probably have a closer genealogy.
Indeed, yeah.
To Orthodox Russian Jews. Fact.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's genetically been proved, as I understand it.
Then some, English Jewish actor who's going to be fabulous and brilliant at it. He was so good. He was so good and perfect in that fucking role. Like, just go... Anyone who complained about it surely didn't actually go and watch it because they would have seen.
Right.
What's the name of that main character? It's Tefal. Oh, who gives a fuck? You offered that and you told them to fuck off, I'm sure.
Number two tour. Yeah.
Yeah, Nottingham, no, that's below you.
Dundee. Yeah.
Love that film so much.
Yeah. Sunrise, sunset.
Oh,
sunrise.
It's a long film, though.
Yeah, is it? I haven't seen it since I've seen it. Really.
Yeah, your family. It was nice hearing stories about Molly on Sandwich Bar.
Well, she does. She was quite a character and quite a life, really. If she'd been somebody else's mother, I would find her delightful.
Oh, really?
She was pretty mad.
Was she mean to you, though?
Mean?
I get the feeling that kind you had a nice relationship.
Yeah. Only because I made it so. Yes. She would have... No, I mean, she was crazy. I mean, I thought it was important, especially towards the end of her life, that I did... made sure that we had a good relationship. But it'd been up to her. She had a kind of sort of psychological need to create chaos, I think, looking back on it now, really. And who knows where that comes from, but she liked to set people against each other and stuff like that. I mean, she was also an amazing character, but you know, she did like to create division and chaos. I remember that, yeah. Well,
was that focused on you?
Well, anybody that came into it, crosshairs, really. People next door, she's very good at, you know, kind of finding what upset people and then working on it, you know.
Bloody hell. Fuck, she sounds dastardly.
You don't become a comic. You know, people have said this. People say, ask me, how can I, you know, ensure my child becomes a comedian? I say, be horrible to them. That's the best way to.
That's not true. That's not true. Depends on the kind of comic. Oh, God. Did she approve of, or is this getting too personal?
No, I don't mind.
Did she approve of your relationships?
Yeah, she was both. Yeah, she was sort of impressed with Linda, and Linda stood up to her, really. So. But, you know, obviously it was difficult. But I'll tell that story about the first time I was on TV and I rang Molly up the next day and said, what do you think? And she said, well, Keith Allen wasn't very good either. She would, she did that thing, which is typical kind of as well, that I remember a friend of ours, their mother had a stall in Birkenhead Market selling cloth, and this woman had come in and say about how his son was on the telly and doing this and doing that. And she just thought she was insane, but in fact, it was Molly. I mean, she was insane, but for different reasons, really. But she would brag to other people, but never give me any praise.
Yeah, it's pretty typical sounding.
Yeah, it's pretty typical kind of immigrant. Very common with Chinese, I think.
She had a Yiddish accent kind of thing?
No, she had Liverpool. That kind of, it's a Liverpool Jewish accent of people born.
What does that
before
sound
the
like?
Second World War. It's quite nasal and... Though she's from Manchester, there's a terrible Zionist. There used to be Molly's MP. She's from Manchester. I can't remember her name now. Louise. God. Anyway, she's got.
What year are we talking?
90s. I've rowed with her on the media sometimes about previous incursions into Gaza. What? Who was that woman who had an affair with John Major? There was a Tory minister. She's from Liverpool. She's from the Liverpool Jewish community, and she's got the accent.
Edwina Curry.
Edwina Curry, yeah. That's kind of Molly's accent.
Okay. I was hoping you'd do an impression.
Louise Ellman.
Louise Ellman.
Yeah. Again, she's got it really. Even though she was from Manchester, but she always sounded like my mother to me, really, which was very, gave me very mixed feelings, since she's a raving Zionist.
Oh, yeah, look at her. She's 79 now.
Yeah.
She's a dame.
Yes. Well, you know, she would be.
She was a Liverpool MP.
Yeah, she was the MP for Liverpool, Riverside, where my mother lived, where her doting son bought her a beautiful house that she was never grateful for. Would never say thank you.
Oh, right, and she quit Labour over the Jeremy Corbyn anti-Semitism bullshit.
Yeah.
Fuck you, Louise Ellman, closing
indeed,
the tab.
Even if you sound like my mother. Oh. So I say weird emotion stirred up right here.
That is, did you, any reflections on our wonderful guest last week? Thank you to Jess Bernard for joining the podcast.
No, she was lovely. I think she was very nice. I still don't know what she's doing in the Labour Party, but, you know, that's her choice, really. And
had a couple people reach out and say they will only cancel their membership if they get kicked out.
Right.
I guess there's something to be said for that tenacious, stubborn kind of attitude that, like, you don't get to tell me what this party is.
Yes, I suppose so.
As long as I'm here, I stake a claim to a part of this party.
Yeah, well, okay, yeah, fine. I've been reading this book about... what's it called? Not Tenor. I get in about Starmer. I'm obsessed with reading books about the Labour Party.
Yeah.
But I don't know why where that comes from. But they comment on the absolute dishonesty of the way that, you know, the authors say it was dishonest to Morgan McSweeney, the way that the lies that they told, the way they hid their true intentions. I mean, they're not nearly explicit enough about who the people are who backed Morgan McSweeney and Labour together, where the money came from. But nevertheless, one of the things that Linda noticed about Starmer, though, when he was, when she was in the Labour Party in his war, was that he always surrounded himself with a fawning group of young people, horrible kind of nerdy political kind of, young kind of, come out of student politics and then got into local government or think tanks, but just the creepiest, nastiest, always Zionist as well, creepiest kind of most, and he really basked in their admiration. And there's a reference here, but they're talking about towards the end about the battle between this is very Westminster Village shit, but the battle between Sue Gray and Morgan McSweeney, but just saying about how Keir's got all these boys in his office, young men, young political men, and how much somebody says he thinks they're his children. It's a bit creepy. And I think that's a really interesting insight into that man, really. I don't know what it tells us. I mean, apart from what it actually tells us, what it means, really. But he loves being surrounded by these fawning acolytes, really.
Well, there's one thing being approved of by your peers, but to have the youth on your side is like a really big accomplishment for anyone in that age
bracket. I don't think it's the youth. It's just some terrible, terrible young people. I wouldn't.
Yes, like but he's he's fooling himself.
Or
he's trying to create that image.
I don't think it's about. I just realized that I'm going on about this after you've spent about 10 minutes telling me how great Sandwich Pat is as well.
I'm not young, though.
Yeah, but well,
I'm nearly 40, Alexi.
Yeah. Anyway, but I just thought it's.
Maybe that's a reaction to how much young people genuinely, Jeremy Corbyn,
real inspired young people, yeah.
In their, tens and hundreds of thousands.
Yeah.
Rallying around Corbyn as if,
I don't think there's many of these shitbags, but he's scooped up the worst of them, really, and surrounded himself and, older men as well, people like McSweeney and, people, I don't know. It just,
Oh, a little Linda Wilf interaction in the background. Hello, Wilf. Hi, Linda.
Can you come and shut? I'll shut the door.
There's nothing more disgusting than a young Zionist. There's something particularly, kind of a like they're in a cult, but
yes,
the real evil veneer on it.
Yeah, I mean they're not just Zionists, but also sort of they're ambitious politically and. Right wing.
Imagine being young and wanting to get to politics. It's so
I know, exactly, disgusting. Exactly. I mean, we're streeting,
That is not the street, politics. The road into politics. Just make something of your life and then be asked to represent your people.
Yes.
That's how you should get into politics.
Yes.
Imagine coming out of university, I've got a politics master's and I'm ready to run this part of the world. And just that oozing ambition. Is just the wrong, complete wrong makeup for a politician. That's
yes,
not
but
what
that
we
is
need.
What our political class is these days, And,
spotty little fuckwits.
Yeah. Yeah. As you say, spotty little fuckwits. So that's that, anyway.
Quick shout out to new patrons that have joined this week. We had Victoria. Hello, Victoria. We had David upgraded his membership, added a couple extra quid a week.
From gold to platinum.
Something like that, yeah. Well, no, don't get ahead of yourself. They changed it from £2 to £3. Lee joined. Thank you. Welcome, Lee. Laura commented, no. George also upgraded his membership. And there's one more. Dr. Steve.
Dr. Steve.
Welcome, good doctor.
Yes.
How are you?
Film club. Film club. Film club. Come and watch the film club with Alexis. I watched Quick Change last night, which I forced people to watch, and I didn't like it much, really.
Shit. And that was Alexis Hill's film club.
It wasn't very good. I made you watch a film that is all right, but not really great. I don't know if it's because I know it too well, but obviously none of the, you know, the first, that like reveal of him on the subway train and stuff, you know, the first time is very effective, but once you've seen it, you've seen it, you know.
At the very beginning.
Yeah.
But what about the reveal that the two released hostages were actually...
Yeah. Well, the first time you'd think, why are Randy Quaid and Gina Davis being held hostage in this bank? But, I mean, I just think, you know, it's a sort of... when there's not much else, that those narrative revelations are not enough. Well, you know, you watch it once and then... The great... American film critic Pauline Kael only ever watched every film once, which is a very unmodern thing to do, really, because people, I think, watch their favorite film over and 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 over again. But that was her thing that she said.
Well, what the hell? Yeah. What else was your look? Quick Change. Let me just introduce it for our listeners. Grim, a city planner who's fed up with his city, decides, along with his fiancée, Phyllis, and his brother, or something, Loomis, to rob a bank and run away to Fiji. With nothing but a clown costume and some parcel tape, they pull off the heist.
Yeah.
Oh, they also
They do get away with it, which is, I think, unusual. I think these days they wouldn't be allowed to, actually. They do get away with the robbery, which is an unusual twist in itself in some
way. They make a very strong point that the money's all insured and no one was harmed.
Yes, that's true, yeah.
Now all that's left is to make it to the airport in time for their flight, but the city of New York has other plans. The cops, mafia, obsessive compulsive bus drivers, ethnically vague cab drivers will do all they can to stop them. Will they make it in time? Or will New York City chew them up and spit them out like a Big Apple? King Kong pizza rat. Hey, I'm walking here. Taxi driver, Chrysler building, Giuliani, Wall Street, hot dog. Quick Change, 1990. Bill Murray, Gina Davis, Randy Quaid.
Yes, thank you.
Incredible cast. Jason Robards, who I first saw in Magnolia back in like 2000 or something. Brilliant. Phil Hartman, Tony Shalhoub. What did you think of Tony Shalhoub?
Yeah, no, he was good. I mean, that was a breakthrough role, was it? No, he's currently on Netflix in the 2000s TV series Monk, isn't it? Which he plays some kind of autistic detective.
Yeah.
Tony Shalhoub is very funny. Like you said, that made up language that he speaks. I always liked that.
Interesting choice. That feels like it was his choice.
I wonder, really. I don't know whether it's some expert in kind of made up language. Because it sounds very real. It doesn't sound like a Kodak language at all. It sounds absolutely like a real kind of.
Well, yeah, to your
Middle Eastern.
To your plebeian English ears, yeah.
Yeah, I've been around. Hablo Espanol.
Had some like Dog Day Afternoon qualities to it in the first 20 minutes. I felt like, when are they going to get out of this bank? It felt like they were planting themselves there for the whole movie, but I knew there was more to come. What else did you hate about it? Or did you hate it?
I didn't hate it, but I didn't love it, really. I was just I mean, did anybody commented on it?
No.
That shows it tells you, doesn't it, really?
I suppose, but
maybe, it's not political or anything. I mean, it probably doesn't really appeal to our demographic, really. I can't remember. It's okay. And I say the first time I watched it, I loved it, really. So that, in a sense, should be enough, really. There's no reason why you should have to watch it. I mean, one of the things I find interesting is just even compared to London, what year was it made, did you say?
1990.
1990, and New York is still an absolute wreck then that they drive past.
Yeah.
Streets and streets of, and presumably now all those gaps have been filled in with pricey. I mean, New York is not a city that I know at all. But, you know, all those gaps presumably have been filled in with price. And they talk about tearing down. Also, there's a small thread about tearing down beautiful buildings and stuff. But presumably now all those areas that were derelict then are now absolutely sprawny and full of Lena Dunham types. But that's a, you know, relatively rapid turnaround. I assume they are. I don't know. Maybe somebody who knows New York can tell you. Maybe there are still areas of kind of dereliction in New York. It seems unlikely.
I don't think it was till like mid-90s really that all started, isn't it? Was that Giuliani's doing?
Probably, yeah. I don't know. I don't really trust Giuliani, but yeah.
But so it's not inevitable. It's the same as London. It's inevitable, yeah. But obviously, if you're going to, it wipes out a lot of the character of a city. But in terms of like crime and cleanliness and, there's good and bad to that kind of massive overhauling, isn't there?
Yeah.
When you look back at it like now.
Yeah.
But I guess it kind of sterilizes a place.
It does. They're all the same. Every city in the world has got its Shoreditch, you know. Taipei, Baghdad probably got like a graffiti-covered neighborhood where you can get a flat white.
That's
probably
one thing
not
I hate about
Kabul,
it.
But maybe they have. Yes, but it seems very universal now. Yeah. So it was all right. It was kind of double header. Also a New York thing. We were going to do it with a. We're going to also watch or urge people to watch the movie Saturday Night, which is HBO movie,
which I couldn't watch. Because they've taken it off all the streaming stuff because it's in cinemas. It's back in cinemas at the moment.
Oh, really?
But we had Mark in the Patreon chat wrote a nice write-up for Saturday Night. And he also watched it last month because, it was on streaming. You could at least buy it on streaming, but now all I could find was to pre-order it.
Right.
And there's a... He mainly watched it because of the Scouse actress, Emily Fairn, who plays Lorraine Newman in it. To support Merseyside, Famalam.
Yeah.
He gets what Jason Reitman is trying to do by creating a frenetic mood piece about the hour or so backstage before the very first episode of Saturday Night Live. But the film is actually at its best when it ignores the bustling detail and actually stops for a moment. The sequence in which, let's pause there. Do you agree with that? What do you think?
Yeah. I'm interested to hear what comes next.
The sequence in which Dick Ebersole, played by Cooper Hoffman, confronts Lorne Michaels, played by Gabriel LaBelle, about the truth behind his baby and how NBC literally want it to fail, the baby being the show, is arguably the high point of the movie. And it's just two guys talking on a stairwell.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of interest. There's a fabulous. We're not steeped in US culture, so we don't really know the. There's a fabulous performance by J.K. Simmons, who plays Mort. Is it Mort Sahl? Who I think was a kind of a staple of kind of US light entertainment.
Yeah.
Is it? Yeah. Wonderful, amazing performance. And you just see this kind of predatory kind of showbiz monster, beautifully done by. Interestingly enough, Cooper Hoffman is in a. He's obviously a comic. He's in a movie.
Licorice Pizza.
No, another movie called The Old Guy or something, which stars my old friend Christoph Waltz. And Christoph Waltz, Lucy Liu, and Cooper Hoffman. About a fucking retired hitman or just about to retire hitman.
It's called Old Guy.
Also directed by Simon West, who I co-starred in a disastrous TV series that he directed in the early 2000s for Fox TV. The last time I probably worked in sort of American-ish television.
What show is this?
Keen Eddie, it was called. They yanked it after four episodes.
Have I talked
about Keen Eddie before?
No, American comedy drama series, Keen Eddie. There you are. I've seen there's a photo of you and a cast walking across the Millennium Bridge in London.
Yes.
That's from this, is it?
Yeah.
And it's a bad show. Well, it's got a good rating.
Really?
8.4 out of 10.
Well, then why did they yank it after four episodes? Sienna Miller, it was her first big job as well.
Eddie Arlett is a down-on-his-luck New York police detective. Dumped by his girlfriend, drug bust gone bad. He's sent to England. Oh, the worst punishment. He's sent to England with his dog, Pete.
I don't think the dog made it past the pilot, but I can't remember now.
It's like a French bulldog. To clean up the mess he made from his botched narcotics sting. Yeah. During his first week, he contends with a host of characters. I assume one of them is you.
Yep. I was the kind of fuzzy bear guy. If you remember your Starsky and Hutch, I was kind of...
Oh, really?
Kind of the connection with the underworld, Well, maybe I won't do it now. I don't know, but we can do our a Keen Eddie special.
Fucking hell! Well, we need to do some research to find out where we can watch it.
Can you watch it anywhere? How many episodes could you watch? Does it show all?
I'll do some research. We won't get too.
Yeah, Simon West also made a really good film. I like film, although it's got some. He did like. Con Air, which I think is a great film. Yes, they just probably have some dubious content. But
low ratings is why they cancelled it. It's just low ratings is the only...
Well, that's because people didn't like it, yeah.
Lots of blogs online saying they're furious that it got cancelled.
Really?
And there's a nice Reddit thread about it just from a year ago. And you're on all the images. You're one of the main cast.
Yeah, I was one of the series regulars, yeah. Until I wasn't.
I imagine you had one scene per episode, basically.
It was weirder than that. I mean, we filmed the pilot, and the pilot obviously got picked up by Fox, and I was part of the central, the five central. I was a series reg, as our joint agent now calls it, says about people. So I was a series reg, and then so we made the pilot, and then we made episode two, in which I played a prominent role. And I said, bye to the car, see you on Monday sort of thing. And then they never got in touch with me ever again, really. Until, I think, episode 11, they got me back to just basically be an extra. Well, I was on pay or play, so I was getting paid anyway, so I didn't care.
So you were only in those three episodes?
Yeah. And one of them, I don't do anything apart from point at things.
Well, you're very good at that.
Yeah, but I don't know whether their research showed, people didn't like the whole thing. So whether or not they objected to me, I don't know. But yeah, they never, it was a weird experience. He's a very nice guy. He later was in he's a staple of, what's he called? The central character is a staple of kind of US kind of TV, not quite soaps, but what's his name? You see there?
Mark Valley,
yeah, he's a nice guy. And also, what's the other, his English sidekick? He's a very, Julian Ryan Tutt, he's lovely.
Yeah.
He was in it as well.
Oh, he's very recognizable.
Yeah, Colin Salmon, Sienna Miller, and me.
Sarah Jane Potts.
Yes.
One Ball Bill, played by Alex McSweeney. All right, cool. Let's. I'm going
to
try and
find... Yeah, we can return. We can circle back to that.
Yeah, we'll circle back to that. Mark, about going back to Saturday Night, Mark goes on to say he thinks Reitman, the guy who made the film Saturday Night, is a bit too close to the people he's portraying.
Yeah.
And... Hello, Wilf.
Wilf, shut up.
No. Oh, God. So he puts them up on a pedestal a bit in the film.
Yes, I think there is. It's a bit too hagiographic, as we say. It treats these people like they are demigods, people like Belushi and that. They clearly aren't, really. But, yeah, so that's what I found most... you know, I didn't like that about the movie really. But it's interesting, yeah. Anyway, that's a very perceptive review from Mark.
Thanks, Mark. Yeah. But he says, with the exception of Chevy Chase, because I guess no one was close with Chevy Chase. How is he portrayed in the film?
Kind of a bit of a dick, really.
I'd imagine so, yeah.
Yeah, but not, you know, the actor, I mean, I think that the actor playing him is a bit too handsome, really. I mean, that's one of the things interesting thing. You know, actors are always, I suppose the comics really are always kind of good looking in some way, you know, even very striking looking. I remember going to the opera once and seeing like a big opera, like Don Giovanni, and realizing all the people on the stage, they were actually like really ordinary looking. Like they looked like they'd just taken a random bus and put them on the stage, because the reason that they'd been chosen was because they could sing, not because of their appearance, and therefore they were random. It was a real kind of profound moment for me when I realized that. Whereas actors, you know, are always striking, really. I mean, comics are as well, but in a different, slightly different way, really. So, I mean, a few of the people in that movie are too conventionally handsome, really, compared to the people that they're playing, who were kind of uglier but more interesting. I mean, that's just a fact.
I think that started in the 80s, really, with the kind of rise of the action star and less censorship happening late 70s and the 80s, when things were allowed to become more overtly sexy, and you'd have lots of like glory shots, close-ups of glistening bodies, handsome faces, beautiful faces. And I think that also lined up with the quality of the technology being able to portray these faces. You know, gloomy, black and white, gritty film cameras, you could get away with having Humphrey Bogart was like,
yes,
he of course people fancied him because he was in films. People fancied him and loved him because he was charming and was in Hollywood films, not because of his striking good looks and all that. No. You know? So when the technology got improved, censorship went down, so things could be sexier, and you'd have more close-ups that were really high quality. I think people start to notice how important it was that your actors should look like models.
Right.
But it does create a bit of a
separation.
We talked about that film, didn't we? That was Hitman on Netflix. Did we talk about that film?
Or was that with someone else?
Because it's like a semi-true story about a guy who goes undercover as a hitman.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, certainly I saw it.
He was far too handsome to play that character. Yeah. He's meant to be like this schlubby nerd guy.
Yeah.
But he was a fucking super hot, built, strapped, Adonis, shit, brick house, fucking handsome white guy.
Yeah.
Who was very good in the film.
Luckily, he was
really funny. And you know, obviously, I think that film was his baby, though. That's why he cast himself as that character.
Right. But yes, that's very true. I mean, normally you don't really notice it, but because the people in Saturday Night were playing other people, real people, you notice the kind of disjunct between their appearances, really.
Chevy Chase sex symbol. Women loved Chevy Chase in his heyday.
Yeah, but he was a lot odder looking than the guy who plays him.
Because he was 70s handsome.
Yeah.
But he carried it on. Did you ever meet Chevy Chase? I've been secretly hoping you have a Chevy Chase story, because they're all absolutely disastrous and amazing stories.
Now you mention it, I don't know. I don't think I met any of those people, really.
Are you a fan of Saturday Night Live?
I never watch it. I've never watched it. I mean, it used to be that you couldn't watch it unless you got videotapes sent over from the States or something.
Yeah.
And then, so I never really got into it, you know. I mean, I'm aware of what it is, and obviously I probably know about it more through 30 Rock, really.
Yeah. Ah, that's a good comparison, because that's also basically about the making of Saturday Night Live, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
And by the sounds of it, I think they probably pull it off a lot better.
Well, it's a comedy, you know, which it's not direct. It's obviously inspired by Tina Fey's experience as being head writer on 30 Rock. It's a brilliant series. I mean, 30 Rock is just amazing. It's a fantastic. But maybe because it's actually out now, comedy, it's also the performers there are much more human looking, really.
One last question about this movie.
Yeah.
You have said that the reason why you're interested in this film to begin with is because it portrays an experience that you have had, which is preparing and performing a live TV show, national live TV show. But I don't think we've got into the weeds of what that was like for you, and also whether this film was a good portrayal of that energy, that feeling.
It kind of is in a way, really. I mean, just that thing about just go. I mean, it's like, you know, thinking about Sandwich Bar in a much smaller way, obviously thinking that at 6:30, suddenly this thing goes into 1.2 million homes, you know. We talked a bit about live television because we talked about The Big Breakfast and stuff, haven't we? It was a very different thing, really. I mean, a very thrilling thing to do. We're reaching our limits, aren't we, really? I mean, I did this show called OTT, which was, there'd been a children's show called Tis Was, which had featured Lenny Henry, Chris Tarrant, Bob Carroll, John Gorman. And then they decided to make an adult version, which went out live on ITV at like 10 or 11 on a Saturday night, I think, was it? I don't know. Friday night, Saturday night, I can't remember. And I was a part of that, really. And it was it was a mixed bag. I mean, the thing about about like Saturday night and Saturday Night Live crew is that by and large they share share an ideology. They're the same people, you know, with the same general goals. Whereas the people on OTT, there was me that had a particular view of the world, and then there was everybody else who had a very, very, very different view of the world. So that was a weird, you know, that was a very weird experience to do that because of that, really.
In what way was it weird?
Well, we didn't get on, really, you know, but I thought what they were doing was terrible. So I'm in the middle of this show, which is getting a lot of hype. And, yeah, it was, a lot of it was sexist. And so, you know, so I'm in the middle of this catastrophe, you know, this kind of show that is very much against my values, and I'm doing it because I want to be on the telly, so that's it. So. And I did, you know, I also did, you know, I chose some of my weirdest material to do, you know, prime time on a Saturday night. Now I'm doing stuff about Albania.
When you said everyone like had spunked on their seats or something? Was that when you made that joke?
That got medicine. Tarrant said afterwards, thanks, Lex, I'm in enough trouble as it is. And that remark got mentioned on the annual review, like when Ofcom or whoever reviewed ITV that year, that my remark was mentioned in the, you know, the negative column. It felt familiar to me in a way, that sensation of going live with a comedy show on national TV it brought a lot of it back to me, really. It was interesting from that point of view. And it's an experience that very few people have had, really, to go live on a national, a 1 hour comedy show, given that obviously Saturday Night Live was a lot better than OTT. But, it was interesting for me to watch it just on that basis, really.
I was on live national telly once. Were you? I was dressed as a giant red nose on the one show.
For the one show.
And I was bouncing around in the background.
That was just when you were trainee, whatever the hell it was, you were trainee.
While they did a naked sprint across White City Television Center.
Who did?
They had like 100 streakers. It was a mass streak
right,
Red Nose Day. And I was a giant red nose. They just stuck me in this costume. That's when I was a runner, yeah.
Yes, well, funny. So
I've had that feeling too, you know. I can really relate. Yeah, go on.
No, but the big hit of that night was OTT. It was this group called, what are they called? Naked something or other. Malcolm Hardy, it was. And they did a balloon dance, but naked, you know, but skillfully.
Oh, and they pop balloons.
Pop the balloons. I think maybe they would then reveal themselves. I mean, you know, ran out of balloons. But that was the bit that Molly said she liked. When I rang her the next morning for my usual debrief.
Okay, that's been Film Club. Thank you, fucking Mark, for your contribution there. You really saved the segment.
Yes, it's very. You should be writing for The Guardian or something, Mark.
He does write about film for a living.
Right, yeah.
I'd love to learn a bit more about that, Mark. Let me know.
Perceptive review.
I studied a lot of film studies in my time and in my education. I'd love to talk to you about that, Mark. You remember last week we were talking about the privatization of everything, and including trains.
Yeah.
Anthony says in the Patreon chat room, support the show, go to patreon.com/AlexiSalePodcast. That's patreon.com/what, Alexi?
No, patreon/what? Patreon.
Exactly. Alexi, and you can join the chat room and join in with everyone else there in this support this show. Anthony says, regarding the reduction of train accidents since privatization, remember that,
yes.
Alex?
Yes.
I think this was largely down to the phasing out of slam door trains. It was no longer possible for Vivian to put his head out the window.
No.
The introduction of computers to manage signaling reduced the numbers.
Very much, yeah.
The number of trains ramming into each other.
Yeah.
Such as
it's just surprising that Germany, I think, I mean, again, has a terrible record, relatively speaking, has a terrible record of rail safety. Even before, I mean, I know they've got some privatization nonsense now, but anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, maybe, yeah, slam doors and computerized signaling. And
yeah, he tells the story about a train crash in Purley where a fast train crashed into a slow one and they went tumbling, toppled down the embankment in Purley. Mm. Okay, one more thing. Did you manage to... I've had a whiplash of ethics, or whatever you want to call it, but with this Oscars Palestinian-Israeli co-production, No Other Land is the name of the film. No Other Land, Michael on the Patreon chat room, let us know that it will be on Channel 4 on Tuesday, the 4th of March. Oh, that was 2 days ago. Okay. They screened it on Channel 4. Maybe it's on demand now.
Always up to the minute, yeah.
But so the Oscars was last Sunday. Monday there were some clips I wanted to see Conan O'Brien's opening monologue, which I thought was really funny, and then I just saw the news of this Palestinian film and watched the speech. Did you see that? Did you finally get around to watching the acceptance speech? And at first, obviously, I was incredibly moved and happy to see Palestine getting this huge platform. And then, you know, then to see that this Israeli guy, even though I kind of was irked that he pushed the Palestinian aside to make sure he got some stage time as well.
Yeah.
He said some really nice things about Palestine, as well as repeating the media line that I think they have to say, you know, he said horrific October 7th, free the hostages. I'm like, okay, you have to say that. But then he's also said, the sentiment, which I've always repeated from the beginning, the only future is one where all Palestinians are free and equal.
Yes.
And I was like, fuck me, that's on the Oscars stage being said out loud and getting a massive round of applause. I'm like, wow, incredible. Then I find out a couple of days later, I'm a naive twat for thinking that was a good thing that happened at all. And he's just a liberal Zionist. And, you know, by him having that platform is actually just normalizing the occupation and the colonization. And there have been lots of mixed feedback about that moment.
Yeah.
And on the one hand, it's like, fucking hell, be grateful for what we're getting. This is an unprecedented thing. And to see all those people on their feet clapping for it. But then also it all got tainted. Are they clapping just because there's an Israeli there with him? Why does the Palestinian need to have an Israeli babysitter there to say this is okay? So I wanted to get your thoughts on that because I'm still, I've become more pragmatic about it and I'm not just naive.
Well, these are all good points and I wouldn't necessarily... I wouldn't put myself up as an expert on this or really tell anybody about how to think or how to behave. You know, I think, it is contradicting. Obviously, the idea of a liberal Zionist is a bit like, you know, saying a liberal filling, you know, let's not say nothing.
It's like okay. Shell having a green energy.
Yeah, or a liberal. Liberal KKK or something.
Yes.
It's an explicitly racist ideology, which, you kind of take what you can get, I think, in a way, you know. I mean, it's, everybody's point of view is valid about that, really. I would just personally just kind of grateful for the exposure and the subject matter being raised at all when there's so many efforts to silence anything about Palestine, you know, which is the great moral catastrophe of our age, you know, that people are actively, you know, with the shit about the Gaza documentary on BBC and all that stuff. I'd kind of take, you know, kind of take what you can get, really.
It's true. Exactly. It's amazing.
It's also unfair.
It's amazing that the issue was addressed at all at the Oscar.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be my point of view, I think. But yeah, what you know, those negative points are what you say are also true, really. Oh, well,
yeah, before this, if you'd asked me 2 years ago, I had the line that, you know, we are at a time now where there are Israelis who've been born in Israel. And it is their home. And and you have to be honest about the history and why they're there and their ancestry and all that. You have to be honest about that. They are colonizers. But you were born there and you know nothing else than having been born there.
Yeah.
So the only solution moving forward is one state, equal rights. Everyone have their say. Everyone have their place.
So, yes. I would agree with that. I always say, I mean, the response, you know, most white South Africans that were, you know, enacting apartheid were also born in South Africa.
Exactly.
So fucking what?
So fucking what, sure. But also, can you live with yourself kicking someone out of their home? It's like you're angry with them for kicking you out of your home. So give us back our rights. Let us have the right to return.
Yes,
and we will graciously let you stay here because you were born here, and this is your fucking home as well.
Yeah,
fine.
Yeah,
we all eat hummus. Let's not eat pork together. Let's all just be fucking mates. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which would be a beautiful utopia.
Well, settle for that. Yeah. Well, yes, it would be.
But now, how much harder is it to say that now? How unforgivable are the fucking deeds that we've seen, you know?
Yes.
And it'll take basically sainthood for that to become the reality again from the Palestinians to be able to just forgive and move on for the sake of their children and their grandchildren.
Yes.
They might be bitter and never forgive their neighbors ever again, but for the sake of their fucking offspring. Just fucking move forward and build something new together.
Yes. Well, one would like to see that opportunity, but that's not even it doesn't seem a long way off, really, is it?
It's the only
Only I agree, yes. A two-state solution is idiotic, you know, yes, impossible.
That will result in war forever. Free Palestine forever. Always.
Indeed.
We haven't said that, those two words, enough on this show. Free fucking
Free Palestine. From the river to the sea.
Yeah.
We haven't really touched much, which is fine. I mean, which is good. But we haven't touched much. We haven't touched on world politics. I could do a much longer dissertation on Keen Eddy, really, you know, I could say a lot more interesting things about it. It was a really extraordinary experience. So, yeah, we could do a watch Keen Eddy.
That's to come. I'll find out where we can watch it. I'll get some clips and post it on the Instagram.
Yeah.
Maybe you could talk me through what's happening in Ukraine. You can talk us through that next week.
Okay.
And
start
from now thinking about next month's film club.
Yeah, okay, I feel like maybe some suggestions, because I feel like if I forced everybody to spend $3.49 and also watch a kind of quite ordinary film in many ways, I'm sorry. Forgive me.
Or just pick one that's actually good. I liked Quick Change. I disagree with you. I thought it was great. It was my first time watching it. No, great is a strong word, but I didn't dislike
it. It's all right, yeah.
I didn't dislike it.
No. One of the nice things, all the plot points were tied up. You know, it didn't leave any, you know, so much writing, particularly in television, but also in movies, is just, you know, sets up all these interesting plot points and then doesn't pay them off, you know. And everything was tied up very neatly, you know, with the kind of, you know, the mafia guy at the end and all that, which was, you know, I mean, you should commend that. That's good writing, you know, and a rarer and rarer.
And everyone got what they wanted. The police chief got his big big case before retirement, and they got their money and they flew off to Fiji.
Yeah.
Randy Quaid lost his mind, didn't he?
I think he has done, yes.
Yeah.
And if anybody has any input on that.
Poor bastard.
I think he's gone. Yes. Yeah,
ran away to Canada and... This is like a conspiracist and all that, but a great performer, has some classic film roles.
Yeah. He's also in, of course, in one of my favorite, was one of my favorites, which again, probably I wouldn't enjoy as much, which was Animal Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
With Chevy Chase,
to bring everything beautifully. Talk about good writing. This is good podcasting, because everything comes Fletch back himself. Around.
I love Fletch. There's that Fletch remake or reimagining.
Yeah, with John Hamm. I watched a bit of that, yeah.
You didn't like it?
Not much, no.
I really liked it. I was hoping that could be our next film club. All right, fuck all that. Right,
we'll see.
Fuck me, fuck you, fuck everybody. Love you all.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Alexis L podcast. This show is produced and edited by Talal Karkouti. Music by Tarbush Records. Thanks to Audio Boom for hosting us. Please keep your emails coming in at alexislpodcast@gmail.com. Goodbye.